direct me into the Western repeater. You know, for some reason, you know, propagation changes every now and then. So instead of swinging my antenna around, you know, I just switch from one repeater to the other, you know. I tried Selden earlier today, and it was kind of on the noisy side, so. It's amazing. So I have a, you know, my antenna's on a rotator. So I have it set where I can switch back and forth instead of, what I used to do is just keep swinging the antenna back and forth. Now I found a happy home. Back to you, Ryan.
Yeah, very good. I mean, unfortunately, you know, LimeWire doesn't kind of believe in Brooklyn that much. So I'm left doing this through internet providers. You know, if I had a bigger antenna, I might be able. I put up a little Yagi. Unfortunately, it's the path between me and the repeater goes right through a co-op apartment across the street. So I really didn't get any benefit from the Yagi. So I'm here on All Star. What can I tell you?
Yeah, I think you remember Mel, K2KY. He found it was a bit of a dead spot over there, too. I think he lived not too far from you. And we used to get around and tell him, you know, I remember telling him, we got to get an antenna repeated on top of the parachute, you know, the parachute jump over at Coney Island, which I think would be great, but that would be a perfect location for a repeater, repeater antenna system. Back to you, Ron.
Yeah, that would be fantastic, because I'm about maybe 15 blocks away from it. Matter of fact, on the wall of my shack is a very nice black and white picture of a very cloudy day looking at the parachute jump from the base. So that would be wonderful. But yeah, I never had the opportunity to meet Mel. I joined his other club, the Kings County Radio Club. I think it was in October of 2011. And unfortunately, at that point, he was on his deathbed. I still remember the president of that club reaching out to Dick on one of the text nets to inform him that Mel had passed away.
That was a shame. And he had a great call, you know, K2KY, because he loved Morse code, so. And he used to fall, we told that story before. He used to fall asleep listening to CW. That's how he used to relax. And, he's long gone now. He was terrific. That's great stories, you know. Another one of the old timers. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I actually went back into the archives to listen to some of his presentations. He did a very nice presentation. He had a book of mathematics dedicated to electronics, and he did a little talk about how you can calculate impedance as resistance and reaction, the legs of a right triangle, and the impedance is the hypotenuse. And it was such a nice talk that I actually found a used copy of that mathematics for electronics, and I have it in my library.
Really? That's great. Wonderful. Very good. And I know he met Dick, K2Y, W, many times for field days. So, you know, after field day, you get to hear the stories. You know, because Dick used to travel around. He used to go, you know, to Lime Rock, and then he'd go out to Kings County. and a couple of the other ones on the island. He used to like to try to visit them all. But, yeah. Good stories. Anyway, I'll be listening out.
Okay. Unfortunately, all they were stories that people told back and forth at each other, and it's sort of a shame. I wish I could have met him. Well, I wish I could have meet everyone, you know, that I know on the radio. It's kind of weird how radio works, that never actually physically met John. I never physically met Dick. But, you know, they were still good friends of mine. So it's a good and the bad aspect of amateur radio that, we're able to kind of develop these relationships without ever actually physically having met.
Yeah, I know. And I'm out in the middle, way out in Suffolk County, so I have to think twice before I drive into Stephen Tenanzo. Although, I did that for last field day. By the way, they have one heck of a great place for field day in that park in Hempstead. Big, big difference from the old place. It's a great choice. I'll be there again. So with my fingers crossed, hopefully. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Yeah, Kings County Radio Club tends to use Floyd Bennett Field. We've been inside buildings. They kind of showed us the door. We've put up tents, and they've blown down. When it rains, it really rains heavy in Floyd Bennett Field. But it's the place that we call home for our field day. Anyway, once again, this continues to be AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limar Technical Net. We're in the last few moments of this segment, and then we'll move on. But again, if anyone has any comments, questions, answers, statements, what have you, you're best to deploy them now, because soon this segment will be gone. Okay, well, I guess everyone's kind of tired. Well, thank you all for participating, and I hope you'll join us again next Sunday when we try and do this all over again. Stay safe, be well. I'll be back a little bit later, but now it'll be time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2X.
Okay, where I switch repeaters, it looks like propagation changed. So, I guess my audio is about the same, right? Maybe a little lower.
A little lower, but it's fine.
Yeah, okay. I left Glen Oaks and on about out here. This way I could run on lower power. I have to run high power. When I go into the Western repeater. Okay. Yeah, well, don't have all that many topics, though. You know, we went through one of them anyway with Wes. That was one of the things I was going to discuss about the asteroid. And we went through that already. So there is a crew that's going to be launched to the International Space Station in March 12th, and their plan is to stay for another 6 months, and that would give the crew that's been up there for about that long. Well, two of them have been over eight months. That's the ones that are supposed to be stranded up there, which they're not, but I. The new crew is going to be the commander has been up there before. It's a woman, and her name is Anne McClain. She'll be the commander of the flight, and then she's got got a, another woman, she'll be the pilot, Nicole Ayers, first time for her to go up, and then a fellow from Japan, he's been up there before, and also a Russian. Still have arrangements with Russia. For every flight that goes up to the space station, they'll bring a Russian up, you know, on the American side. And when a Russian Soyuz launches, they'll always have an American on board that flight. So the idea is that no matter what happens, you'll have at least one American and at least one Russian on board the space station. You know, they agreed on that, you know, from day one. You need somebody to handle the propulsion and everything to do with propulsion is on the Russian side, and everything on the American side has to do with power and solar panels, you know, supplying power to the whole station. It's an agreement between the two countries. Anne McClain, she's been up there before, did a good job years ago, back in 2018, so she got to fly again. She's also scheduled to be one of the Artemis astronauts in the future, so a possibility actually of eventually going to the moon. She's, you know, qualified for that, so that should be good. We'll see how this flight goes. Crew that's, you know, the ones that are coming back, Sonny Williams and Butch Wilmore. They went up June 5th, and now they're up there for a total of 8 months, like I was saying before. And they'll be coming back with American and Russian that went up all by themselves about six months ago. So they would normally go up with four people. They went up with two. In this case, it'll be great. In that transmission for some reason. Anything different with your radio, or is it just a propagation?
Nothing different with my radio. I noticed that you were coming in pretty poor about a minute ago.
Yeah, crackly on our end. I'm going to switch back to switch back to Glen Oak. Stand by one. Alright, well, we're going to try this. How's this, Charlie? A little bit better?
Much better, much better.
Yeah, I think Selden might be affected by the wind or something. Very windy. And tomorrow it's going to be windy. Next day it's going to be windy. So, glad we had all that rain, got rid of all the snow. So, that's helped. So, yeah. I wanted to talk about three vehicles that have plans on actually going to the moon. And that's Blue Ghost, one of them. And then there's a Japanese one called Resilience, the Hakuto R mission by Japan. And then there's another one by Intuitive Machines called Nova C. So what's going to happen is Firefly was launched a few weeks ago, and they plan on taking around 40 days or so to land on the moon with Blue Ghost mission. So it launched, it orbited Earth quite a few times, and then it had a slightly elliptical orbit, and every time they got down to perigee, they would ignite the thrust until, and each time they would go further and further out until eventually they left Earth orbit. Now they're in lunar orbit. There's actually pictures coming back on Firefly, mission, the Blue Ghost mission. So hopefully that will land. Let me drop it. Very shortly, it has plans of landing on the moon March 2nd. It's a weird time, 3:45 in the morning. So only real night owls would be up watching that. So I'm sure I'll see a recorded version of what went on. But hopefully that makes it. It'll make it to the northeast corner of the moon. If you look up, straight up, and over to your right. That's the location where they'll be going. A place called Mare Crism. So it's got 7 experiments from NASA on board and 3 private ones. So we'll see how that one works out. The first try for Firefly. And personally, I think they're going to make it. I mean, they've gone through a lot of testing. I think they got a good shot at this thing. It stands about, I guess, about 7 feet tall. Pretty wide. Almost a 5,000 pound machine that's going to be landing there. So I got my fingers crossed. We're expecting very good pictures. They already have pictures of the Earth as they're flying to the moon. Now there's pictures coming back of the moon from Blue Ghost. Now, when that thing was launched, in South Park, there was two spacecraft. One was called Blue Ghost, and the other one was Resilience, the Hakuto R mission by a company called iSpace from Japan. So, an American and a Japanese. Both lunar landers launched at the same time, but they're going to be landing at a different time. They have a landing date for Blue Ghost, like I said, March 2nd, but the iSpace mission, Resilience, will not land probably for another couple of weeks. They have a different trajectory. Like I said, Blue Ghost orbited Earth a couple times and eventually orbited the moon, and that orbit will get lower and lower over time until they make a decision on landing. Where iSpace chose a different way because, they have a heavy vehicle, a lot of stuff on board. So they decide to go out past the moon. They pass the moon and all the way out, roughly about 1 million miles away. But, 4 times the distance of the moon. Get out there, and then by the time they get out there, it'll be slowing down to like 0, And then what'll happen is the gravitational pull of the moon will start pulling it back toward the moon. And by having that kind of a system, they could have either heavy a payload, which they do in this case, or you could use less fuel on a rocket. So the good news is that, you know, it will probably be able to land using this system. Bad news, it takes, you know, a couple of months before they could actually land. You know, you could not put a human on that. You know, you can't wait a couple of months before, you know, put them out in space, deep space. So, you know, you need different kind of propulsion system. When a human flight goes up, you know, you need to have to put your engines, slow yourself down, put yourself into orbit. You can't go all the way out a million miles, hang out there, and eventually come back. I mean, you could do it, but, you know, the cost of feeding somebody and having them breathe for months on end is prohibitive. But if a robot lands, you know, no problem. So hopefully Japan will be successful with their flight. The last time they tried it, this is actually called, you know, number two. You know, Hakuto R number two. R, I guess, stands for resilience. The name of the lander. Number one, they tried a while back, a little over a year ago. And they had some bad numbers. They tried to land, and they didn't figure it right with the thrusters. They came above a crater, and, you know, they used radar and LIDAR to determine their altitude. And when they came across the crater, you know, they saw the height of the crater, you know, the rim of the crater. It thought it was near a land, so shut its engines off. Thought it was time to land, and it wasn't. So then, meanwhile, the gravity still pulling on their craft, and eventually they created their own little crater on the moon. So this is their second attempt for ice base. So hopefully they make it. They got a good chance of making it also. So not to be outdone, we have another American flight that's going to be going up by a company called Intuitive Machines, the Nova C flight. You know, that's going to be going, that should launch very shortly. I had the date here somewhere. I lost it. Anyway, that's going to be launching at the end of the month. I think it was the 26th or 27th. Anyway, within a couple of weeks. You know, before the month is out, and that will be launching, and that has more of a direct flight. They're looking at like 4 days from launch. The Nova C will go into orbit in only 4 days. So I'm going to guess the landing should occur around the same time as the Blue Ghost landing occurs. Who knows? Maybe they'll be landing at the exact same time. But they won't be landing in the exact same place. Nova C is going to be landing on the south pole of the moon, where Blue Ghost will be heading to the northeast section of the moon. So we'll see. We'll be following these. I'll try to report on them as they hopefully land. Any comments? WS2N.
This lunar terrain vehicle, does it expect to make, how far one will it go? Two, are they going to create experiments on this?
Yeah, all three missions have their experiments, different types of experiments. I went over list of them, I think, a couple of weeks ago. And like the Firefly Blue Ghost mission has 7 experiments by NASA. One of them is, I find interesting. They've got this drill that's supposed to drill into the surface about 6 feet. So, you know, take readings. Another one I like is they have this like plate glass. I don't know if it's glass, but it looks like plexiglass. So it's flat. It's clear. And they have electrodes hooked up to it. And when they land, you know, there's always dust that comes up. And they expect dust to, you know, go all over everywhere, including this glass plate. So the experiment is, you know, at some point they're going to turn it on, and they're going to, you know, have cameras. They'll be able to look at this thing. And what will happen is the dust will electronically move right off the plate. And when I saw a demonstration of this, it was, you know, during the launch of Blue Ghost. And NASA guy was interviewing the guy from the company. And he had a little piece of, you know, the same thing. And he demonstrated it right there. He sprinkled some, you know, what looked like moon dust on top of this thing. Turned it on, and I mean, instantaneously, the dust just went away, you know, moved to the side. Yeah. And the benefit of that would be, you know, this moon dust is very abrasive. You know, you don't want it to get on your clothes. You don't want it to get into your lungs. So if they could find a way to, like, clean up an astronaut, clean up an environment before they, you know, enter a living space, you know, that would be like a miracle. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one. And there's a half a dozen other experiments that they have on board. And we'll see how they do communication experiments, you know, all kinds of weird things, you know, you know, NASA. Anyway, back to you, Charlie.
Now, this vehicle, it's going to run solar. How far will it run on a single charge?
Yeah, they all have rechargeable lithium batteries. And if you look at the top of Blue Ghost, you know, it's got a big solar panel. And you got to remember, that's not landing. That one's not landing near the pole, so it'll be facing the, you know, facing out. So you'll be able to get the sunlight hitting the panel, no problem. And you'll be able to operate. Well, if they land when they're supposed to, they'll have like almost 14 days to operate. You know, on the moon you have 14 days of sunlight, 14 days of night. They don't expect any of these to really last through a lunar night of 14 days. So it'll be a 14-day experiment no matter what they do. You know, anything into the night, they do expect to run hours or so, many hours into the night, because the batteries will still be charged. But eventually, the batteries will die down. And they don't expect it to make a comeback 14 days later. Well, it's possible. We will see. But it's mainly a 2-week experiment after they land on all 3 of these vehicles. The other two, they plan on landing near the South Pole. The solar panels, you'll notice, are tilted. They have them on the side a little bit. You know, this way, the way the light hits the moon on a, you know, a different kind of angle, not straight down, they'll be able to get more sunlight hitting the panels. So again, yeah, they'll all be solar panel vehicles with rechargeable lithium batteries. You really won't need much of the battery power until the very end. So, there you go. Back to you, Charlie. WS1. They have much more complex systems. You could have solar, RTG, radioisotope thermoelectric generators, which could run for years, you know. You could have fuel cells. You have hydrogen and oxygen, which eventually they could probably extract from the moon. Or they could even bring with them. You could have fuel cells, power something through the night, through the 14 days. That would be very good. But, you know, it's more equipment, more complicated. Somewhere down the line with human flight, I'm sure they'll have that. You know, Blue Origin is planning that to some future. Run fuel cells on the moon, but it's tough to get through a lunar night. It's actually easier to go to Mars. You know, Mars. You know, you have not 24-hour days, but you know, 23 hours and 20 minutes. That anyway, you have there's 40 minute difference, but they have day and night. So you're actually better off on Mars. Look at all those rovers that went around. Opportunity was solar powered. You know, they were hoping for 3 months, and they got 14 years out of Opportunity riding around on the surface of Mars. By the way, one of these vehicles, I think it's this Blue Ghost mission. One of them has a little rover on board. I think it's one from Japan. Anyway, a little rover on board. Tiny one, you know, it's smaller than a microwave oven. And they plan on driving that just, you know, some distance away from the lander to communicate with. Yeah, I think they're going to use 70 centimeter communication with the lander. But, and it also has on it a little house, it's like an art form. You know, some artists make this little red house, and they're going to put it on the surface of the moon and take a picture of it. You know, that's what I mean by a commercial experiment. You know, there's a lot of that nowadays. Anyway, back to you, Charlie, before I move on. WS1.
Oh, you can move on, Paul.
Very good. Yeah. There was an Einstein ring, another one discovered recently by the European Space Agency telescope, Euclid. I was going to mention this before. This is the telescope that discovered the Einstein ring. And what that is you look at something, it could be stars, it could be a planet, it could be a galaxy. And if you have some kind of mass in front of it, usually dark matter, it changes the way the light is, you know, coming toward Earth. And Einstein predicted that, you know, if you had that, the light behind it could actually form a gigantic ring as you look at it. And they found that. They photographed it. And, apparently that's a big discovery to find one of those. They don't last forever because as the dark matter moves, the galaxy, whatever it is that you're looking at behind it moves, eventually that changes and goes away. But it was theorized years ago, and they could use it to look at distant stars and things that, you know, supernovas and things in that are way behind that you could not normally see. So it's used as a magnifying lens for the astronomers. So they're all happy about this. They, you know, see one of these things. There's been a couple of them that they've found over the years. But this one was just recently. It's called NGC 6505. It's in alignment with another galaxy that's over 4 billion light years away and has never been observed. So by having this, you know, one thing in front of the other, they could look at a galaxy that they've never seen before. So astronomers, again, are very happy about that. Any comments?
No. I was looking at what the James Webb telescope was doing.
Yeah, well, what happens is some of these telescopes, like Euclid, will spot something like this, and they'll take the James Webb Space Telescope, and they'll use some of that time to focus in on the same thing to get an even better view of whatever they're looking at. I think I read that where they're going to use James Webb to look at the Einstein ring as well. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. By the way, Euclid is located in the same orbit as James Webb Space Telescope. So it's a European Space Agency telescope. It's been out there, I think, a little over a year. So it's doing a good job. And it does different work than James Webb. And, of course, the mirrors on it are nowhere near compatible. James Webb is like 21 feet in diameter. So that's an incredible piece of work. They say it's about as big as a tennis court. So, okay. Just want to mention that the Rakovlev had another launch of an electron vehicle. And they're up to their 59th launch. So, you know, it's very competitive with, of course, SpaceX. You know, 59 launches is a lot of launches. And this is a relatively small vehicle, a couple hundred feet high, I think around 120 feet high, compared to SpaceX, which is like 230 feet high. But what's going to happen is they're going to eventually move on to the Neutron rocket, which should first launch, I think, not this year, but probably sometime next year. And that will be reusable. And that will also be launched from Wallops Island, Virginia. Electron is launched from two complexes in New Zealand and also another complex in the United States in Virginia. And they're setting up another new complex for the Neutron rocket, which is, you know, I mean, they said eventually that will be able to launch people. So it's a good-sized rocket, and that will be all reusable. We'll see how that development goes. They say that, you know, they're well on the way. It's a composite-built rocket, you know, similar to the Electron rocket. Or a lot of it, you know, involved in that. So we'll see. Don't have anything else. A little early, so if anybody has any comments, now's the time. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report.
they got four rockets going up this week. They got one from Cape Canaveral, one from California. I take that back. Two from Cape Canaveral, and one from California. They got one from New Zealand, and the one from Florida is going up at exactly the same time.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll watch for that. I haven't read about that. Yeah. Eventually, it's going to get my flight, you know. We'll be using FlightAware to track all the rockets that are going up and coming down. I said this years ago, you know, as they were developing reusability. And, you know, global-wise, you know, at least one rocket is launched every 3 days. And in some cases, like you said now, they don't have three of them. And that's just by one company. But on a global scale, you know, you have sometimes two rockets going up the same day. Now, in this case, it'll be the same time. And, you know, but most of them, you know, are just putting up more satellites, you know, communication satellites. Starlink is thousands. You know, they're up to, I think, well over. You know, I think they're getting close to 5,000 or 6,000 satellites. Blue Origin will be doing the same thing with their Kuiper satellites. They're going to be putting up 3,300 of those. Once they get New Glenn operating, you know, properly, not that they need them. They have contracts with Boeing. Boeing launches the Vulcan rocket. And they have, I don't know how many, 10, 20 launches with them. Each one, multiple satellites. They have a contract with European Space Agency. With the Ariane 6 rocket now, that's the new rocket. And you know, before you know it, they'll have over 3,000 satellites in space. And not to be outdone, China is doing the same thing with a ridiculous amount of planned satellites. So we'll see. Only amount of time before these things start hitting one another, I think. Any comments? WS2N.
Next generation, high speed, and then they're putting up old satellites. I don't see the difference. I mean, I do see the difference, but I don't understand why they're putting up old satellites and new satellites.
Yeah, Starlink, they have two different versions. I think they've gone up. Now there's a third version planned once they get that big rocket going, you know. And what happens is the earlier versions, they fade them out. And they don't just leave them there. They fly their little thrusters and deorbit them. They become shooting stars. Eventually, the newer ones replace the older ones. You know, look at the TDRS system that NASA started with years ago, tracking data relay satellites. Big things. I mean, these things are as big as a bus, and they're in geosynchronous satellite orbit. And they originally needed just three to. You know, rely on three for communications for the ISS and for spacecraft like the Hubble. You know, they use that system. But then there would be a lot of places, there would be dead spaces. You know, they'd lose communications for a time. But we can't have that. We need more TDRS satellites. And I think there's 11 that they have launched. Some are not working. You know, they're going to be replaced now. They're all 100% RF. Not going to plan on putting newer ones up that are going to rely a lot more on both RF and you know, optical. You know, where they'll send infrared lasers back and forth, which has proven to work. So, you know, that could be the future of some of these communication devices. So, more satellites in geosynchronous orbit, more satellites in low Earth orbit, and medium Earth orbit. I don't know how many satellites we have for global positioning satellites, GPS. They're mid-range, around 11,000 miles up in the air. You know, half the distance between the geosynchronous communication satellites and Earth, around 11,000. You have those things, you know, and we're not the only ones. China has their version. The European Space Agency has their version. That's called the Galileo system. You know, I don't know how we're going to be able to see the sun after a while, Charlie. It's all going to be blocked out by these things. NASA uses, or will be using in the future on the Artemis program, to bring the astronauts from the prep room, the building that they put their spacesuits on before they launched it to the moon. You know, it's roughly, in some cases, it's 4 to 6 miles away from, you know, from where they suit up to where they actually launch. So years ago they had the Astro Van, you know, the Astro Van would take the astronauts out to the launch site. Big beautiful vans. Well, now they planned on using these electric vehicles from a company called Canoe. And they contracted with them and they bought three of these good sized vans, and nice looking futuristic kind of vans, and they're electric. You know, I guess NASA wanted to say, you know, green friendly, so they contracted with this Canoe company. And it turns out Canoe has gone out of business. They're toast. You know, they sold vehicles to Walmart and they different places around it. I guess around the world, maybe. But they're gone. NASA decided to, you know, keep these vans. They work fine, you know. Why should we contract with anybody else? So they're going to keep their Canoe vehicles for future transportation of astronauts from where they suit up to where they actually launch from. At Launch Complex 39B. This Launch Complex 39A, 39B, 3980 pretty much turned over to SpaceX years ago. And they kept 39B for the Artemis launch. So hopefully that thing will eventually get off the ground. Hope they don't fiddle with that whole program. I've heard conversations where, oh yeah, that would be a good idea to do away with Artemis. I think that's a terrible idea. And not only that, you have practically every state in the union has contractors, people working or, you know, either fought directly or indirectly for the armaments program. You know, thousands and thousands of jobs depend on that. Plus, it's a great program to have NASA be able to eventually land people back on the moon. So with that, I'm going to close. Thank everybody for standing by here. Let me drop. And, we'll try to be back tomorrow. We have the Limeout Clubnet, or InfoNet, as they call it, tomorrow night at 8:30. And that's always followed by Swap and Shop. And that's always followed by Amateur Radio Newsline. But for now, we'll turn it over to Roy. AC2GS, this is WSON. Thanks for letting us do all this. Over to you, Roy.
Thanks to you, Paul. Thanks to everyone. Paul, as always, we appreciate what you do with the SpaceNet Report, with the Technical Net, and with the club. We're all very thankful for you you being here with us. And thanks to everyone that participated as well tonight. Hope you had fun. Hope you come back next Sunday when we do this all over again. Before I leave you, I'll remind you a couple of quotes. Dick K2RIW, we mentioned him a few times tonight. We try to mention him every Sunday night. He would end his Technical Net with the advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. Also, I'd like to kind of remind everyone of good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas and new ways of looking at things, but don't open them wide enough that your brain might fall out. Anyway, have a great week. Enjoy President's weekend, and come back next Sunday. We wish you all well. And we will call it a night and be done after I say Slava Ukraini.
I'll speak to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Have a good night, Charlie. Thanks for stopping by.
I enjoy it.
Very good, good to hear. We'll catch you next time. WS21 clear.
That's time complete.